This podcast is produced in partnership with Freed2, a communications and digital agency for the charity world. We enable impact for good through thoughtful communication and efficient use of digital. Find out more at freed2.com. Welcome back to the Leadership Podcast with me, Ed Perry, and with Sim Dendy. Nice to see you, Sim. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks, Ed. I was just reflecting to you earlier about, you know, coming back from sabbatical, you end up squeezing into your life more than what you used to do beforehand. But I had to keep reminding myself last week in the busyness that being busy is a privilege, not a problem. And I had to keep sort of a little mantra kind of telling myself, no, this is good. These are good people. These are good meetings. These are good conversations. And so I've come out of sabbatical and I feel like I'm getting squeezed the other way instead. But it's good. It's good to be here with you.
It's funny, isn't it? I was talking to someone else last week. Life does seem very busy at the moment. I can't believe we're recording this in March now. We're already, you know, into the third month of the year. Time is flying by. Thank you, everyone, for listening so far. We hope you're really enjoying the podcast. I think we've had some really insightful conversations in the first two episodes. And today, we have a real treat. Today, we've got Joe Frost with us on the podcast. Hello, Joe.
Hello. How are you guys?
Doing well, thank you. Let me just introduce you and then we will give you a proper welcome again. So Joe joined the Evangelical Alliance in September 2017. She'd previously worked with a number of Christian charities, including Share Jesus, Release International and the Bible Society. She has a master's in public communications and worked for an international campaigns consultancy specialising in human rights and environmental issues. If that wasn't enough, she went on to set up her own business as a comms consultant and a brand specialist. She's also co-author of the book and series Being Human, and we're looking forward to talking to you a bit about that, along with Peter Linus. And that has now developed into a podcast and a video teaching series. She's married to Andy, and well, I think I'm going to call us neighbours, Joe. It's not quite true. We're not actually neighbours, but in this ever more kind of closely digitally connected world, we're actually close enough to have met for a coffee in person. So I think that counts. Big welcome to the podcast again, Joe.
Thank you, neighbour. Absolutely. All the best people live in Southwest London, I feel. So yes, absolutely.
Well, Joe, I want to jump in straight away because I've listened to your Being Human podcast, and as people, fellow podcasters, trying to make what we do sound everyday normal interaction, I love the kind of the scale of what you and Peter are trying to do, because I think it's broad and it's big and it's, like, you know, risky possibly. But so what was the kind of thing got you started? Why do you think, let's call it Being Human? Why do you start talking about culture and about the challenge we face? What was that late night conversation that you had that, oh, this is a good idea, and then the reality hit?
Yeah, absolutely. There's this awful meme out there, isn't there, where two people are having a conversation going, this is really interesting, we should start a podcast. And and it was genuinely that. We were having a great chat and we were like, oh, other people would want to listen to this. The hubris. it was basically we were sifting through all the different conversations that we were having. So Peter works more in the advocacy space with the EA. I'm more missionally orientated, but there's so much overlap between what we were doing and the conversations that we were having, and some of the kind of pitfalls and arguably some of the silent spaces. So in our cultural conversations, there's lots of times when you're just like, I don't know how to speak into this. I don't know how to be heard well in this. Am I going to trip up? Am I going to cause offence? I don't understand this. Things are changing really fast. There's loads of these sort of conversations happening. And yet our gospel story does have responses, does have answers, does have something to contribute to it. And all of these things are around the very simple, fundamental question of who am I and how do I live in this world? How am I to be human in this moment? So we got chatting and then we were like, this is big, just like you said, it's massive. So we decided that in one way, actually having a conversation and using the podcast medium to chat that through before too many people were listening, might actually be quite a good idea. And then it turned out that people did start listening, and then we had to write a book, which is a terrible idea. So I know you've written books, so I don't understand why. kicking and screaming into a book space. But it's been a really interesting journey to ask those questions of what is, what are our cultural conversations and how do we bring the God story into them?
And I can I say that I admire your courage, because as someone who also has conversations with Ed and other people like yourselves, the risk of recording a risky conversation, you're not just recording a conversation, you're recording some of the most challenging, and you're going taking people into the places where no one really wants to talk about things, but you're not just talking about them, you're actually recording them. And that's, I mean, I'm honestly, well done, both you and Peter. I think you've, and you're having the conversations probably we're all having, but don't know how to have them. So thank you for helping us in managing that. Really good.
Oh, thanks. I mean, my hope is that we don't put ourselves too much over there as saying this is how it should be done, but actually to say let's have the courage to start wrestling these through and see if there are biblical principles that might help us, if there are narratives that might guide us. Because you're right, so many of us don't know how to have it. And unless somebody's brave enough to start trying, we're all going to be just sat on the sidelines waiting for somebody else to step up. So, yeah, hopefully it's worth the risk, but hopefully people will find some courage to have their own conversations and feel equipped and capable of doing it themselves.
With this podcast, we're trying to reach out to Christian leaders, whether they're leaders inside the church or Christians leading in other roles outside the church. Why are those questions of identity and the other kind of questions that you explore through Being Human, why are they so important for leaders in particular?
Well, I think it is that issue of silence, actually, that so much of our role as leaders is to model and demonstrate and support the people of whom we are serving and supporting, to give them the courage and the tools and the ideas and the inspiration to go out and do it themselves. And I remember having two completely different conversations with two leaders in totally different settings and streams. And both of them were talking about things that they didn't feel that they could speak about in the pulpit because it wasn't safe. They didn't know how it was going to be heard. They didn't know how it was going to be received. So they'd made the conscious decision to not speak about those things in that space. The problem was, the assumption was then that it would drop down in kind of discipleship conversations and more relational spaces. But because nobody had seen it modelled from the front, nobody felt confident or equipped to do it in more relational spaces down a level. And that meant that there was a discipleship gap at a more relational level, which meant that there was an evangelism gap because nobody knew how to speak to people outside of the church, which meant that there was a workplace gap and a witness gap, and just gaps just kept forming because there was no modelling from the front. And that's not to say that we need to put our leaders on pedestals or that it all revolves around them, but there needs to be some kind of demonstration. Have confidence in what we believe, have confidence in the conversations that you can have. So I suppose what we're trying to do is give leaders language and shaping and understanding so that they feel that they can speak into their space, so that other disciples and other followers and other members of the church community, they feel like they can speak in their space and it just ripples out. If there isn't equipping at the leaders, then why on earth do we think there's going to be equipping in the rest of the community?
And kind of following up to that then, how important Is it for a leader then to be truly authentic and kind of, you know, really open and vulnerable, perhaps? Do you think that's a necessary thing for leaders to be?
I think leaders have to lead out of a place of honesty. I always trip slightly over the word authentic because it implies in some degree that there is there's almost this idea that as long as I'm being authentic, I don't have to necessarily change or transform or do better. Authenticity always feels a little bit to me like a step down from integrity.
Sure.
So I think there needs to be an integrity in leaders and a vulnerability when appropriate, But as much as anything, it's an honesty. So either be honest about the expertise that you have as a leader, but also be honest about the ignorance and the naivety that you have as a leader. Feel honest about the skill set that you do have, but be honest about the skill set that you need from the wider team around you. Be honest when you say, I did this and it went really wrong, but here are the three things that I learned from that. Or be honest about, actually, I've done this over and over again, and I can honestly tell you that this works. It's that refusal to fake it. It's that refusal to say, I need to be something other than I am. But equally, always coming back to an obedience to, this is who God has positioned me to be in this moment, but I'm not everybody and I'm not everything. So I always have to pull from the team around me. And for me, that is the kind of the authentic voice of the leader that I would be looking for.
Well, let me just push back a little bit on that, Joe, because, you know, as a church leader myself, I fully agree with what you're saying. I think leaders have to go first. We have to set the tone, set the example. You know, if we can't talk about our own challenges and, you know, how do we expect other people to do the same? But last summer, I did a talk in front of my church community about a piece of scripture that I felt strongly about. And we were talking about culture. We did a whole thing using John Tyson's book, which was fantastic, just looking about, you know, where we're pushing it back against the culture, and what's the church's role within that. And I did a piece and then went on sabbatical. In my absence, that talk became a bit of a hot potato, to the point my trustee board decided to take the talk down because it was causing so much challenge. And it was always at the top of our YouTube channel. Now, this is my question to you, I suppose. I know we're pushing around a little subject here, but you're saying about leaders going first, and I fully endorse that. But when we're living in this age of the internet, when is it appropriate to be online and offline with your leadership talks? Because some things, and I'm still working out whether I did the right thing or not, I still don't actually honestly know, because I still fully believe what I've said and how I presented it, and I'm comfortable with what I put together. But was I doing it in the right space? And would it have actually been more to our integrity to have done that just in front of our church community and turned the systems off?
Yeah.
Your cameras, you know, and all the rest of it? Or was it actually being more authentic because I'm going, this is what I believe, here we are? But you must face this all the time, obviously, within your work when you're representing the EA. When do you know when to present in a certain space and when not to? And are there any kind of like things you think that you've learned yourself in the past, Joe?
Oh, that's a great question. And one, I'd say there's a huge amount of honesty even in just referencing that story. So I love that.
You can't find the talk though, because it was taken down. But there we go. For any listeners who suddenly think, oh, I'll look that up. It's not there.
Google. Yeah. Hold back. I suppose that's my question a little bit around the authenticity language. Because the other thing that you hear a lot is this cry for transparent leadership, which again, I would resist, actually, because there are some moments when absolutely transparent leadership is essential, but there are other moments where it's really unwise to be transparent, because actually, in order for other people to be able to go off and do their function, there are some things that actually need to be protected from, so that they don't go, oh my goodness, what does this mean? And they don't feel unstable. And because actually there are some things that need to happen in a room so that everybody else is free to go and off and do their own thing. So sometimes transparency isn't always that helpful. I think it's a really interesting question about honesty and spaces. So I might be really honest with my colleagues. I might be really honest on a sermon, in a platform, on a podcast. But I'm going to have a different level of conversation than I'm going to have with my husband. And actually, at no point am I being dishonest, but I am recognizing what conversation I can have in one space versus another. And suppose some of those questions around, is this topic of conversation appropriate for public? Is it private? Is it community? Are there any boundaries that while I'm working something through or we're working something through, it would be unhelpful for other people to see the kind of the workings out as opposed to the finished product. And I think that's really a discernment space, and you learn from mistakes and you learn from others. And there are some things that it's really helpful to do within a community. And then there's some things that it's really helpful to say, actually, we're going to take the risk. We're going to do this in public because we want people to see this working out. But I think those things have to be a deliberate decision. So well done for owning that kind of space of discovery and working out, actually, yes, but no, let's do that again, but differently.
Yeah, I think that's a great comment about, you know, when you're still working something out, you know, anytime any of us communicate, we think we've worked out enough to keep, that's why you share it. But then you reflect back even years later, don't you, as you learn as a human being, and you think, oh, if I'd done that again, I would do that differently. So you're always working it out, aren't you? At one level, we're always still processing and still thinking. And then we bump into someone else, like, oh, yeah, that's a different way of thinking about things. But that's a really helpful image around what are we working out, what spaces, who are we honest with. Yes, thank you. Thank you so much. Ed, over to you. Rescue me here.
Well, I've just been thinking about the sort of world we live in, really, which really is pushing for just, you know, so much more information than sometimes it's right to give out. Like, you know, just thinking about social media and, you know, the memes that are going around about where, you know, Kate, the Princess of Wales, is right now. Like, you know, just because she's a little bit ill and we don't have all the information, you know, but we can't handle it as a society now. We can't handle not knowing. And there are other examples in the news where actually not enough information has been given about something, and that's not right. So in a world, again, where, like you said, Sim, everything could be recorded and put online, and in your case, was, like that's a difficult line and balance to tread, and we all, as leaders, have to navigate that one way or another. I'm not sure if there's a question in there. It's just kind of more of a sort of reflection. Joe, you must have come across that in your role at EA as well.
Yeah, I think it is really interesting, isn't it? And Sim, I almost wonder whether or not actually part of the problem was that the conversation wasn't able to be ongoing, because that was the moment that you went off on sabbatical. Would it have escalated to the extent that it did had you been able to carry on that chat? It's interesting in my world. So I work as the comms director at the EA. So a lot of my world is around sign-off. And what do we need sign off and a second pair of eyes over versus you're free, just go off and chat. And it's really interesting that the spoken word in a setting, so a preach or a sermon, that gets less scrutiny than, say, an article, which gets far less scrutiny than a book. That a podcast might be one thing, but a webinar might be another. And it's interesting that we have quite arbitrary lines over what needs to be reputationally considered versus other things that seem to be more formal or informal and conversational. And again, I think that's just a question of experience, of learning when it goes wrong, and actually, oh, maybe we should have checked that. And I wonder whether or not actually that is kind of the cost of leadership, is that you have to own your mistakes. And actually the responsibility of saying, yeah, I got that wrong, is actually a really costly thing. But why the cost of leadership is so high, because we have to take it on board and go, my failings are really obvious. And therefore, actually, I have to be able to say, yeah, I'm going to learn from that. That was a mistake and I'm sorry. Rather than assuming that you have that responsibility, because you never make those mistakes, because that's just not true, really, is it?
Yeah, I think that's although I'm just trying to reflect on your comments there, because I'm thinking, yeah, honesty and hands up, made a mistake. But for some people, it's like it feels like it's never enough. You know, and we see all the time, especially our political leaders, if they hold their hands up, it's too late. It's, you know, whatever. There is, to communicate effectively is impossible, because you're communicating to such a vast audience these days. You know, yes, if I look into a room on a Sunday morning, I've got a certain community I can see. But when, as soon as you go online, you've got a community you can't see. And it could be someone could pick up on your podcast or your video months, years later, and have a view. not just on that day or in that season. And so I do feel for leaders that this is a hard world to navigate, especially if you're communicating. My children laugh at me if I don't post on social media anymore because I just got exhausted and I post sabbatical, I just didn't go back on. And they would laugh when I tried to post because I would take ages to write something. And they said, why don't you just put it up there? I said, because I'm thinking about all the people that may have a different view on what I'm about to say or may misread what I'm trying to say. And you must think that all the time in your communications, you can't check every social media post that goes out from the EA Twitter account or Instagram, but you must have some sort of guidelines you put into place for the people in your team.
You'd think, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would. Now we're getting somewhere.
We do. I'm sure we do somewhere. We operate on a high trust, highly trusted value set, mainly because I just can't. I think the biggest question is for me, how much can I cope with the fallout? So, in all honesty, if I can cope with the fallout, you crack on. And it's a bit of a calculated risk. Actually, it'll take more effort for me to make sure that it's okay before it goes versus actually there's a couple of people that have got a problem with the way this is phrased, or actually the fallout of this is going to be really quite substantial. Let's make sure that we get it absolutely spot on right. The amount of scrutiny that will go into 10 words versus 10,000 is always disproportionate. Because you can't put nuance into the shorter spaces. And I think that's why social media is so exhausting, because it doesn't allow for nuance and it doesn't allow for caveats and explanation and contextualization. And I think that's often why leaders are so exhausted, because their entire viewpoint is reduced to a soundbite and it's a snap decision on 10 seconds. And it's totally unreasonable and totally unfair. So yeah,
often taken out of context as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you can take a clip of, we're having a conversation now, what's to stop someone taking a little small sound clip and just playing it? And yes, Joe did say that, but within the context of a much bigger conversation, but yeah. That gets lost in the kind of like, you know, we don't really mind if it's true or not true, as long as the perception works and it tells a story that sells a few copies of something.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's tough.
It's really tough. The good thing is I work for an organisation that's been around for 178 years now, and it's really hard to kill it. I've tried a couple of times. So I think that's also given me a degree of confidence that actually it would take an awful, awful lot of mistakes to truly, truly undermine even my little bit of the world. And God's kingdom isn't going to be undone by something that you put out in a tweet. There's grace for us leaders to make mistakes. And when we get exhausted by the audiences out there, it's coming back to the audience of one and going, was my heart right? Was my attitude right? Was my intentions right? Did I do the best I could in that moment? In which case, Lord, I just give the rest to you.
That's a great way to have it all in the right perspective. You mentioned it's been around for 178 years. You've been there for 8. What's your journey been like? You're part of the leadership team at EA as well. What's the journey been like for you being part of an organisation like that?
It's been really fun. I promised my husband I'd work there for 2 years. I've been there 8. So again, lots of apologies. I've loved it. A lot of my expectations coming into to an organisation like the EA have been proven to be completely unfounded. Some of the stereotypes that I thought I might see in that space, especially in a leadership space, I've been really humbled by the reality of it. I've seen integrity and I've seen authenticity, and that's been beautiful. I feel really privileged actually to do the job that I do in the space that I get to do it in, and I'm really grateful.
And for those listening who've never heard of the EA, it is possible. Can you give us a quick kind of promo on the work of the EA and your role within it?
Oh, that's a mean. Yes, so we are the oldest and largest evangelical unity movement in the UK and arguably the world. We're the founding member of the World Evangelical Alliance that was started in 1846 in London. We unite individuals, churches, charities with a desire to make Jesus known. So we've got about 3,000 churches, about 800 charities, and 23,000 individual members, all uniting around the gospel. So we seek to encourage people and places and churches to share the gospel and see Jesus transform their spaces. But we also advocate on behalf of the church, taking the issues that matter of the church into places of power, whether that's in the media or in the government. So we do an awful lot of advocacy work. We work to build unity. So if you're in a church or if you're in a stream and think that actually the kingdom of God and the church united stretches beyond your immediate people like us spaces, then the Evangelical Alliance is probably for you, because that's the places we want to reach out and build bridges and connections across.
Now, you said that was a mean question, but you answered it incredibly well there, Jo. That summed up beautifully.
You'd hope, though, to be fair.
Yes, and as our church is a member of the EA, and I'm a personal member of the EA, and I pay that monthly, donation towards the work that you do. And I think it's fantastic, in and out of Parliament, in and out of various government organisations, being, you know, really the face of the church across the evangelical church across the UK. Thank you for that. I'm intrigued, and I'm not trying to cause any offence here, which we talk about how we're careful with our words, but are you probably one of the most senior women to have worked at the EA?
Probably.
I mean, because you're saying it's such a historical, you know, organisation, I can well imagine for the first 150 years, it's probably all men, probably all white men. And it's only the last 25, 30 years that's changed at all, I'd say, just from an outsider looking in.
So there was a director called Helen. She was around for a few years before me. Chinny McDonald was my predecessor as director of communications. So she was around as a young black woman in the evangelical church. So she ticked probably quite a few first boxes and did amazingly in that space. I'm riding on a few coattails, but it's, yeah, that's probably fair for the evangelical community to have not had that many women in places of leadership. So, yeah.
And have you faced any challenges at all in that sort of context? Or has it been just, you know, I know obviously Gavin and the team around you, and I'm sure they've been incredibly welcoming and set you up really well. But I'm sure you've also met some historic people who maybe got a slightly different view. Have you, you know, across all the churches, we've got such a diverse group in the UK. Have you found any challenges in that role?
I think it was fair to say that I expected to receive more challenge than I did. And actually, I was really humbled by my assumptions and my prejudices, maybe, coming into the space. God was not subtle with me to remind me that was probably unfair. I've certainly in my career, I have seen just a little bit of dismissal around women in spaces. I don't think it's been overly conscious, but familiarity and relationship. We're a relational church. So the people that you know are the people that you think of when new things come about. They're the people that you've trained. They're the people you come about with. It's quite familial. And so that then perpetuates some of the lack of diversity challenges that you see. But actually, for me in the EA, I was really surprised and really glad that actually being a woman in that space very rarely feels like an issue.
I really am glad to hear that, Jo, because that is the story you want to hear, that becomes less and less of a conversation around gender or anything else apart from our ability to do the job we're called to do. Absolutely.
Jo, what advice would you give to a new leader starting out, particularly a woman, and maybe as you just said, that's not so important right now, and we should just focus on new leaders. But what advice would that be?
Yeah, so I think it is still important. I would still want men to have the opportunity to be mentored by older men in leadership, because I think some of their insights will be really valuable. I think that it's, whether I intend to or not, I spend quite a lot of my time mentoring emerging women leaders, because actually I get some of the questions that they're asking in their 20s about what their ministry might look like over the next 20 years with family or singleness or kids or career or moving around or whatever. So I think there's some insights that I can learn, but I also know that some of the most powerful and impactful voices that I've had in my ministry have been that of older male leaders. And I'm really grateful that they didn't put up boundaries and barriers against me accessing their expertise and their insights in a way that actually would have been really sad, because I would have missed out. In the same way, I hope that I'm still able to mentor and disciple younger men who are experiencing similar traits or talents or giftings that I might have. So I think there is always something to offer and to support, and there's always spaces for those sort of conversations to have. But I think when those spaces become barriers, that's when we should probably just go, is this a wise barrier or is this an unhelpful barrier? And if this is a wise barrier here, how do we make sure that it doesn't have repercussions somewhere unintended? It's that intentionality around leadership and discipleship that I think has sometimes undermined the goodness of some of the practices that may have existed before. So it's a very long-winded way of answering a question that says, I think it's still important to disciple young women coming into their spaces, but look for as many voices as you possibly can and get as much support from as many places as you can, both men and women, as you're working out what sort of leader and what sort of leadership you want to develop.
Thank you, Joe. I love your thoughtfulness around leadership. I think that's a really telling trait that you're considering, you know, the different approach that you can have. I think as leaders, we need to be more thoughtful than ever before in what we do, and not just assume just because we have a position or a title, we're given full of permission to say or do whatever we would like. So well done for setting the tone of thoughtfulness as part of the challenge of leadership. Ed, I think you've got a final question for Joe. We need to wrap it up in a moment.
Yeah, well, Joe, I mean, this is just more of a personal observation, but I'm sure it's coming across to people listening to this as well. You have just a real talent for being connected and focused and in the conversation. And I think that communicating in a really connected way, I think, would be the way that I would put it. And I think that also plays into a little bit with what you're exploring with being human and our identity and who we are and our purpose. And so, maybe just to finish, tell us a bit about what you've learned about being fully present and fully connected with the people that you're communicating with, especially as a leader.
Oh, little confession time. So you sent through some of the questions so that I could at least have thought about preparing for some of these interviews beforehand. And when I saw that question, I got properly choked up.
Oh.
So thank you for that. And I think the issue for me and why I loved that question, or at least I was really grateful for its insight, is because actually probably one of the biggest challenges to my leadership that I have experienced over the last few years is how to stay connected with the people that I am not currently present to. And what happens in my connected communication with the person in front of me is that they take that sense of focus, and I find it really hard to maintain it with the people that are not in front of me, because actually I'm focused on the current person. And actually that has been a real battle for me in order to kind of not let people feel abandoned or not let people feel like I haven't got that kind of connectedness with them. And so that's been my shadow side, but that's probably been the bit that's been in front of me. So to hear it reflected as a positive, that actually the people who encounter me and I am present to feel really seen, that was just really precious. So thank you for that. And I think that therefore the answer to that question is I think you just have to be really aware of what you do brilliantly as a leader, but also sometimes the cost of what you do really well, because there will always be a cost to the things that you do really brilliantly. There'll be an unintended consequence to some of the talents and the giftings. And sometimes we can get overly concerned with the cost. Sometimes we can be overly inflated on the gifting. But recognizing the two in tension and recognizing the grace over both of those things and building a team that can offset and manage, helping set expectations of the people that you are leading and communicating to so that they know, I'm aware of this. Please give me some grace around this. I'm going to do this really well, but you might need to tell me when I'm failing in this area. And keep that sense of connectedness to with the person, people that you're leading, will go a long way. I know we're wrapping up. So one last little story. I was away this weekend on ministry. I was speaking at a church weekend away, and I got home and my daughter was desperate for us to play a family game together because I'd been gone all weekend. And all I wanted to do was stop. I was done. I was exhausted. I was like, oh. And I said, darling, I'm really sorry, but no, I've got no energy for a family game. And I know that's not fair because you haven't had any of my attention this weekend and you want my attention now. But you can have my attention, but you can only have floppy attention. I can't give you energetic attention. So can we just chill on the sofa and I'll give you that? But I haven't got any energy to give you. Mm-hmm. And she turned around and she said, you know what, actually, I probably haven't got more than floppy attention to give you either. So that works really well. And there was just a really powerful moment to just be honest about what I could give my daughter in that moment. Acknowledge that that was probably not good enough. But say, actually, I can do this. Would this be sufficient? And actually, sometimes in our leadership, just being honest about what we can give and apologize for what we can't and see if there's sufficiency in what we have got the capacity for probably goes a long way to helping people feel connected and supported wherever they are.
Wonderful. Jo, thank you so much. That's a delightful story. And I think it challenges our leadership and how thoughtful we are, how we offer that honesty. Look, I can't do this, but I could do this. I think what a great way of leading people well, communicating effectively. Jo, thank you so much for joining us today on the Leadership Podcast.
It's been great fun. Thanks for having me.
Well, that was really good to hear from Jo Frost, the Director of Comms for Evangelical Alliance. Ed, have you got any initial kind of reflections on our conversation with Jo?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think the bit that she landed on at the end there about, you know, knowing what you're really good at, knowing what people see as your kind of, as a positive, and knowing also, you know, you need to know where your weaknesses are. You know, she was talking about how that, you know, the connectedness of her communication that I'd kind of flagged up as something that I really kind of see in her. But also the flip side of that is, oh, well, that can mean that actually when she's not particularly connected to people that, you know, there could be a gap there. But the kind of self-awareness that she showed to understand that and know that and, you know, what she said about putting team around you to help manage that, I thought that was a really insightful piece of the interview.
And for me, Ed, that piece around, you know, her thoughtfulness or the way she considered her leadership. And I think there's a lot of pressure on leaders to be immediate and to be, you know, make decisive decisions and cracking on and, you know, almost, it's almost a little bit macho type of look at me, I can make decisions on the fly. The idea of pausing, of considering what you can do, of considering the situation you're in or what you're about to communicate, whether it's the right time, the right place, whether it's the right, you know, environment to be having these sort of, you know, whether you've actually worked it all through sufficiently. I just love that kind of thoughtfulness. And I just think it's a challenge for me personally as a leader, probably all of us, to, I guess, is that kind of think before we speak mantra, which has always been good advice. But I love just the way she spoke and the way she gently challenged our assumptions as leaders. A real gift to us.
Yeah, I think there was a huge amount to kind of practically take away, you know, whatever context you're leading in. Yeah, so thank you, Jo. Thank you so much again for listening to another episode of the Leadership Podcast. If you liked this episode, please leave us a rating and a review on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts. We'd love to hear what you thought, and it really helps us get it out to more people. And you can follow us on social media as well. We're at the Leadership Podcast UK on Instagram, and you can find all of our links there.
Wonderful. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Ed.
This podcast is produced in partnership with Freed2, a communications and digital agency for the charity world. We enable impact for good through thoughtful communication and efficient use of digital. Find out more at freed2.com.